The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samutho. Sabbopadhipatinissaggo tannakkhayo virago nirodho nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 24th sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. In our last sermon, we brought up a quotation from the Rohita Sutta, which enshrines a momentous declaration by the Buddha to the effect that the world, the arising of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path leading to the cessation of the world could be pointed out with reference to this same body with its perceptions and mind. The six sense spheres were the six bases of sense contact with which we acquaint ourselves with the world as it is conventionally understood and measured out, are themselves called the world according to the Noble One's terminology. Therefore, one can declare in accordance with the Dhamma that the very cessation of those six sense spheres is the cessation of the world. It is this state of the cessation of the world that is known as Asankhata Dhatu, or the unprepared element. That unprepared state, described in discourses on Nibbana in such terms as Atibhikkhave ajātaṁ abhūtaṁ akataṁ asankhataṁ, monks, there is an unborn, an unbecome, an unmade, an unprepared, is this cessation of the six spheres of sense, which is the end of that prepared world. So then, this particular world's end, the end of the world as defined here, is not a destination to be reached by travelling. The sage Rohitasa walked for 100 years in search of this world's end at the speed of a flying arrow, but he failed to discover the world's end. Why? It is because he took the world along with him in his journey to see its end. Since this six-based body with its perceptions and mind is itself the world, he was taking the world with him in his exploration. That is why he had to die on the way without seeing the end of the world. That end of the world, which one cannot see or reach by travelling, the Buddha pointed out, in the very cessation of the six sense spheres. This fact comes to light in the discourses dealing with Nibbana in the Patiligami Vagga of the Udana, which we had already discussed. For instance, in the first discourse on Nibbana, beginning with the words, Attibhikave tadayatana, there is amongst that sphere, we find towards the end the following statement. Tatra paham bhikkave neva agatin vadami na gatin na thitin na chutin na upapattin appatittam appavattam anarambhanam evetam esevanto dukkhasa. In that particular state, described as a sphere in which there is neither earth, no water, no fire, no air, etc., I say there is neither a coming, no a going, no a standing, no a passing away, no a being reborn. That state which is unestablished, non-continuing and objectless is itself the end of suffering. So then, this journey's end, the journey's end that cannot be reached by journeying, the Buddha pointed out in the cessation of the six sense spheres. We come across the following passage in the fourth discourse on Nibbana in the Patiligami Vagga of the Udana. Nisitasa chalitam, anisitasa chalitam natthi. Chalitya asati pasadhi, pasadhi asati nati na hoti, nati asati agati gati na hoti, agati gati asati chatupapato na hoti, chatupapate asati ne vidha na uram na ubhayamantare ese manto dukkhasu. To the attached, there is wavering. To the unattached, there is no wavering. Wavering not being, there is calm. Calm being, there is no inclination. Inclination not being, there is no coming and going. Coming and going not being, there is no passing away or reappearing. When there is no passing away or reappearing, there is neither here nor there, nor anything between the two. This is the end of suffering. It is in such profound terms that the Buddha described the end of the world. One cannot see it by journeying. It can be seen only by wisdom. In fact, even the very concept of going has to be transcended in order to see it. So it seems, Rohitasa carried the world with him in his journey to see the end of the world. He made another blunder. He was going in search of a place where there is no death, in order to escape death. Even that, the Buddha had declared, is not possible to see or reach by travelling. Rohitasa took Mara along with him in his journey to find a place where there is no death. Why do we say so? In the Radha Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya, we find Venerable Radha putting the following question to the Buddha. Maro maroti bhante ujjati kittavatanu kho bhante maroti ujjati. Mara, they say, Venerable say. To what extent is Mara called as such? Now this is how the Buddha answers the question. Rupe kho radha sati maro va asya maretava yova pananiyati. Tasmahatetvam radha rupam maroti pasya maretati pasya miyati ti pasya rogoti pasya gandoti pasya sallanti pasya aghanti pasya agbhutanti pasya yenang evam pasanti te samma pasanti. Where there is form, radha, there would be a mara, or one who kills, or one who dies. Therefore, radha, in this context, you look upon form as mara, as one who kills, as one who dies, as a disease, as a boil, as a dart, as a misery, as a wretchedness. They that look upon thus are those that see rightly. As in the case of form, so also in regard to feeling, perception, preparations and consciousness, the same mode of seeing rightly is recommended. So in this context, each of the five aggregates is looked upon as a mara from the point of view of the Dhamma. That is why we say that Rohitasa went in search of a deathless place, taking death along with him. From this definition, it is clear that so long as one grasps with craving the aggregates of form, feeling, perception, preparations and consciousness, there is a mara, a killer and one who dies. Therefore it is that by giving up the five aggregates, one is freed from mara, is liberated from death and attains the deathless state. That is why we said that the arahant has attained the deathless state here and now in this world itself. The principle involved here we have already stated while discussing the law of dependent arising. Let us remind ourselves of the relevant section of a verse in the Bhadraudhamanava Puchha of the Parayana Vag of the Sutta Nipata. Yam yam hi lokasmin upadhyanti teneva maro anveti janta. Whatever thing they grasp in this world, by that itself mara pursues a man. Because of grasping, there is becoming or existence, and with it birth, decay and death, etc. follow suit, all due to craving. That is the deep idea behind the Buddha's definition of the five grasping groups in terms of mara. In fact, these six sense spheres, the six bases, are within the jurisdiction of mara. This is evident from mara's own words in the Kassapa Sutta of the Sagathaka Vagga of the Samyutta Nikaya. Once when the Buddha was admonishing the monks with a sermon on Nibbana, it occurred to Mara, the evil one. Now this recluse Gotama is admonishing the monks and the monks are listening attentively. I must go and blind their eye of wisdom. With this evil intention he came there in the guise of Mama, carrying a plough on his shoulder, a goon on his hand, with disheveled hair and muddy feet, and asked the Buddha, "Recluse, did you see my oxen?" Then the Buddha retorted, "What is the use of oxen for you, evil one?" Mara understood that the Buddha had recognized him and came out with the following boast of his superiority. මමේව සම නචක්කු මම රූපා මම චක්කු සම්පස්ස විඥානායතනං කුයින් මේ සමන ගන්තුව මොක්කසි මමේව සමනං සෝතං මමේව සමන ඝානං මමේව සමන ජීවහා මමේව සමන කායෝ මමේව සමන මනෝ මම ධම්මා මම මනෝ සම්පස්ස විඥානායතනං කුයින් මේ සමන ගන්තුව මොක්කසි Mind no recluse is the eye. Mind are the forms and mind the spheres of eye contact. Where will you recluse go to escape me? Mind no recluse is the ear. Mind no recluse is the nose. Mind no recluse is the tongue. Mind no recluse is the body. Mind no recluse is the mind. Mind are the mind objects and mind the sphere of mind contact. Where will you recluse go to escape me? Now this is how the Buddha responded to that challenge. Taveva papi me chakru, tava rupa, tava chakru sampasya vinyana ayatana. Yaptha chakho papi me natthi chakru, natthi rupa, natthi chakru sampasya vinyana ayatana. Agati tava tattha papi me. Taveva papi me sotam, taveva papi me ghanam, taveva papi me jivam, taveva papi me kayam, taveva papi me mano, tava dhamma. තව මනෝ සම්පස්ස විඥානායතන යත්තචකෝ පාපිම නැති මනෝ නැති ධම්මා නැති මනෝ සම්පස්ස විඥානායතන අගති තව තත් පාපිම yours or evil one is the eye yours are the forms and yours the sphere of eye contact but where there is no eye no forms and no sphere of eye contact there you cannot go evil one yours evil one is the ear yours evil one is the nose Your evil one is the tongue. Your evil one is the body. Your evil one is the mind. Yours are the mind objects and yours the sphere of mind contact. But where there is no mind, no mind objects and no sphere of mind contact, there you cannot go, evil one. From the Buddha's reprisal to Mara's challenge, we can well infer that there indeed is a place to which Mara has no access. That is none other than the cessation of the six sense spheres. Since it is something realizable, it is referred to as a sphere in such context as, for instance, in the discourse on Nibbana, beginning with the words Atthi Bhikkhave Tadāyatana, there is amongst that sphere, etc. It is the same cessation of the six sense sphere that is referred to as Papancha Nirodha and Papancha Vopasama, cessation or appeasement of conceptual proliferation. In the Mahakottita Sutta we discussed in our previous sermon, we found Venerable Sariputta making the following conclusive statement to the same effect. Channaṁ āvaso passāyatanānaṁ aseta virāga nirodhā papancha nirodho papancha upasamo. Framed by the remainderless fading away and cessation of the six spheres of sense contact, there comes to be the cessation and appeasement of conceptual proliferation. That itself is the non-prolific state. All concepts of going, coming, being born, growing old and dying are to be found in the prolific. They simply do not exist in the non-prolific. That is why it is inaccessible to mind. In it, neither the sense bases, such as the eye, ear and nose, nor their respective objects are to be found. So it is clear that the cessation of the six sense spheres is that state of release from mind, attainable here and now. All the six sense spheres are built up on the perception of permanence. Therefore, the realization of their cessation is possible only through the perception of impermanence. The contemplation of impermanence is the path to its realization. An extremely subtle contemplation on impermanence that can bring about the cessation of the six sense spheres is to be found in the Dvayang Sutta number 2 of the Salayatana Vagga of the Samyutta Nikaya. Dvayang means a dive. There are two discourses by that name, and this is the second. The strikingly deep vision of consciousness unfolds itself in this discourse as follows. Dvayang bhikkave paticca vinyanam sambhoti. Kathanca bhikkave dvayang paticca vinyanam sambhoti. Chakkuncha paticca rupecha uppajjati chakku vinyanam. Chakku anityam viparinami anyathabhavi. Upanichavi parinamino anyathabhavino ittetam dvayam charancheva valanche anityam viparinami anyathabhavi chakku vinyanam anityam viparinami anyathabhavi yopi hetu yopi paccho chakku vinyanasu uppadaya සෝපි හේතු සෝපි පච්චය අනිච්චෝ විපරිණාමි අන්‍යථාභාවි අනිච්චං හෝමන භික්ඛවේ පච්චයං පටිච්ච උප්පන්නං චක්ඛු විඤ්ඤාණං කුතෝ නිච්ඡං භවිස්සති යා හෝ භික්ඛවේ මේ සංකින්නම් ධම්මාණං සංගති සම්නිපාතෝ සමවායෝ අයං උච්චති භික්ඛවේ චක්ඛු සම්පස්සෝ චක්ඛු සම්පස්සෝ පියනිච්චෝ විපරිණාමි අන්‍යථාභාවි යෝපි හේතු යෝපි පච්චය චක්ඛු සම්පස්ස උප්පාදාය සෝපි හේතු සෝපි පච්චය අනිච්චෝ විපරිණාමි අන්‍යථාභාවි අනිත්‍යං ගෝපන භික්ඛවේ පච්චයං පටිච්ච උප්පන්නෝ චක්ඛු සම්පස්සෝ කුතෝ නිච්ඡෝ භවිස්සති පුට්ඨෝ භික්ඛවේ වේදේති පුට්ඨෝ චේතේති පුට්ඨෝ සංජානාති ඉත්තේ තේපි ධම්මා චලා චේව වයාච අනිත්‍ය විපරිණාමිනෝ අන්‍යථා භාවි ඊවන් බයි ලිස්නින්ග් ටු ඉට් වන් කැන් ඊසිලි ගෙස් දැට් දෙයර් ඉස් ඇ ස්ට්‍රින්ග් ඔෆ් ටර්ම්ස් ගිවින් ද ඐඩියා ඔෆ් ඉම්පර්මනන්ස් ලෙට් අස් නවු ට්‍රයි ටු ට්‍රාන්ස්ලේට් ඉට් Dependent on the diet monks, consciousness comes to be. How is it monks that consciousness comes to be dependent on the diet? Depending on I and forms arises I consciousness. I is impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. Forms are impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. Thus this diet is unstable, evanescent, impermanent, changing, becoming otherwise. I consciousness is impermanent. Changing, becoming otherwise. Whatever cause and condition there is for the arising of I consciousness, that cause, that condition too is impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. How can I consciousness arisen independence on an impermanent condition be permanent monks? That concurrence, that meeting, that togetherness of these three things, monks, is called I contact. Even the I contact monks is impermanent, changing. Becoming otherwise. Whatever cause and condition there is for the arising of eye contact, that cause and condition too is impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. How can eye contact arisen independence on any permanent condition be permanent, monks? Contacted, monks, one feels. Contacted, one intends. Contacted, one perceives. Thus these things too are unstable, evanescent, impermanent, changing and becoming otherwise. The sutta proceeds in this way, stressing the impermanence of the other sense spheres as well, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body and the mind. The entire discourse vibrates with the tone of impermanence. It is the law of dependent arising that the Buddha presents here with reference to the six sense spheres. In other words, how the world gets built up. It is not founded on stable existing things, but on what is impermanent, unstable and changing, whose nature is to become otherwise. This is how the entire perception of the world is built up. Its foundation is always crumbling, changing and transforming. Generally, in the discourse dealing with the question of sense restraint, one comes across the phrase, na nimittaggahi na anuvyanjanaggahi. He doesn't grasp the sign, nor does he dwell on its details. The tendency to grasp a sign in regard to the objects of the six senses is the result of the perception of permanence. Due to the perception of permanence, there is a grasping of signs. And due to that grasping of signs, influxes flow in. Proliferations through craving, conceits and views get heaped up. This is how our world is constructed. This is the way the aggregates of attachment get accumulated. On the other hand, the contemplation of impermanence that leads to the signless concentration is helpful in freeing the mind from these signs. The reflection on an object can be of two types. Where there is a perception of permanence, the tendency is to grasp the object tenaciously and hang on to it. This pervert tendency is known as paramasana. It is impelled by the triple proliferations of craving, conceits and views. Under its influence, one is carried away by prolific perceptions, papanchasanya, and is kept under the sway of worldly concepts and designations born of prolific perceptions, papanchasanya sankha. On the contrary, the perception of impermanence fosters a detached and observant attitude in reflection, which is known as sammasana. It is that healthy attitude which progressively leads to the liberation of the mind from the influence of signs and attenuates the prolific tendencies to craving, conceits and views. This kind of reflection is the harbinger of insight. Contemplation of impermanence on these lines effectively puts an end to this entire mass of samsaric suffering, as is evident from the following powerful declaration by the Buddha in the Kanda Sangatta. Anicca sanya bhikkhave bhavita bahulikata sabbam kamaragam pariyadiyati sabbam kuparagam pariyadiyati sabbam bhavaragam pariyadiyati sabbam avijjam pariyadiyati sabbam asmimanam pariyadiyati samuhanati. The perception of impermanence monks, when developed and intensively practiced, extirpates all sensual lust, extirpates all lust for forms, extirpates all lust for existence, extirpates all ignorance, and extirpates and eradicates the conceit. The contemplation of impermanence, therefore, strikes at the very root of this entire mass of samsaric suffering. The discourse on the diet quoted above amply illustrates this fact. The recurrent terms like chala, unstable, and vile, evanescent in the passage, indicate that the entire superstructure of sensory knowledge is founded on certain pervert attitudes. An imperceptible impermanence underlies it. In a number of sermons, we had to bring up the simile of the motion picture. The simile is not our own, but only a modernization of a canonical simile used by the Buddha himself. The point of divergence was the question the Buddha had addressed to the monks in the Gaddula Sutta. Ittambo bhikkhave charanannama cittam. Monks, have you seen a picture called a movie? The monks answer in the affirmative, and so the Buddha proceeds. Tampiko bhikkhave charanannama cittam cittenema cintitam. Tenamiko bhikkhave charanena cittena cittanema cittatam. Monks, that picture called a movie is something thought out by the mind. But the thought itself, monks, is even more picturesque than that picture. To say that it is more picturesque is to suggest its variegated character. Thought is intrinsically variegated. We have no idea what sort of a motion picture was there at that time. But the modern day movie has a way of concealing impermanence by the rapidity of projections of the series of pictures on the screen. The rapidity itself gives an impression of permanence, which is a perversion, vipalla. The movie is enjoyable because of this perversion. Due to the perception of permanence, there is a grasping of signs, and in the wake of it, influxes flowing, giving rise to proliferation, due to which one is overwhelmed by reckonings born of prolific conceptualization, papancha sanya sankha. That is how one enjoys a film show. All this comes about as a result of ignorance or lack of awareness of the cinematographic tricks concealing the fleeting, vibrating, and evanescent nature of the scenes on the screen. Though we resort to such artificial illustrations by way of a simile, the Buddha declared that actually it is impossible to give a fitting simile to illustrate the rapidity of a thought process. Once he proclaimed, it is not easy even to give a simile to show how rapidly thought changes. Sometimes the Buddha resorts to double entendre to bring out piquantly some deep idea. He punts on the word chitta, thought or picture, in order to suggest the picturesque or variegated nature of thought. Then he asserts that thought is more picturesque, chittatara, than the picture. We can see that it is quite reasonable in the light of the Dwayam Sutta. It is this series of picturesque formations that gives us a perception of permanence, which in turn is instrumental in creating a world before our eyes. Our eye changes every split second. It is quivering, vibrating, and transient. So also are the forms. But there is a malignantly pervert idea ingrained in samsaric beings known as the perception of permanence in the impermanent, anicca nicca sanya, which prevents them from seeing the inherent transience of eye and forms. That is how the six spheres of sense create a world before us. It is the substructure of this sense created world that the Buddha has revealed to us in this particular discourse on impermanence. The substructure on analysis reveals a duality. Dvayam bhikkhave paticche vijnanam sambhuti. Dependent on a diet, monks arise consciousness. consciousness is not something substantial and absolute like the so-called soul. That is precisely the point of divergence for Buddhism when compared with those religious systems which rely on soul theories. In the Dhamma, there is mention of six consciousnesses as Chakkhu-vijñāna, Sota-vijñāna, Ghāna-vijñāna, Jivā-vijñāna, Kāya-vijñāna and Mano-vijñāna. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind consciousness. Every one of these consciousnesses is based on a diet. Just as in the case of eye consciousness, we are given the formula beginning with Chakkhu-vijñāna-rūpecha, dependent on eye and forms. So with regard to ear consciousness, we get Sota-vijñāna-rūpecha, dependent on eye, dependent on ear and sounds, and so on. Even when we come to mind consciousness, the theme is the same. Mananta paticca dhammeca, dependent on mind and mind objects. Mind also is vibrating, changing and transforming with extreme rapidity every moment. So are the objects of the mind. The entire world is structured on these vibrant, transient and evanescent basic elements. That is the burden of this powerful discourse of Buddha. Therefore, if someone developed the contemplation of impermanence to the highest degree and brought his mind to the signless state, having started from the sign itself, it goes without saying that he has realized the cessation of the world. That is the experience of Nibbana. It is at the same time the cessation of proliferation, papancha nirodha. Prolific conceptualization is founded on the perception of permanence, whereby one comes under the sway of reckonings born of prolific perceptions, papancha sanya sankha. Proliferation creates things giving rise to the antinomian conflict. Duality masquerades behind it. It is by mistaking the impermanent I and the impermanent forms as permanent that the whole confusion has come about. One imagines the I and forms as permanent and thereby becomes blind to their momentary change and transience. The glue of craving and intoxicating influxes create a facade of a real world before him. That is the world we touch with our hands and see with our eyes. All this exposes the insubstantial nature of this world. The products of the six sense bases can be summed up by the four terms Ditta, Sutta, Mutta and Vinyata. Things seen, heard, sensed and cognized. The Dvayam Sutta brings to light the fact that all these four are insubstantial and callous. Due to this very fact, the Tathagata who realized the cessation of the six sense bases was confronted with the stupendous problem of mediating with the world that could not even imagine the frightful prospect of a cessation of the six sense bases. That is to say, when he reached the state of non-proliferation, Nippapancha, by experiencing the cessation of the world through the cessation of the six sense bases, the Tathagata had to grapple with the serious problem of truth and falsehood in mediating with the world. There is an extremely important discourse connected with the idea of the void, Sunyata Parisamyutta, which echoes this epistemological crisis in the section of the force in the Anguttara Nikaya entitled Kalakarama Sutta. This Kalakarama Sutta was preached by the Buddha to the congregation of monks at the Kalaka monastery in the city of Saketa. The discourse, though brief, is one that is extremely deep in its presentation of the idea of the void. Before getting down to an exposition of this discourse, by way of sketching its historical background, we may mention a few things. Apart from the mention of the venue, nothing much could be gleaned from the discourse itself as to how it was inspired. The commentaries, however, relate the episode of Chula Subhadra, daughter of Anathapindika, to explain the context in which the discourse was preached. Chula Subhadra, who was a stream winner, Sotapanna, was given in marriage to the son of the Milianaya Kalaka of Saketa, a devout follower of Nigantanatha Buddha. Chula Subhadra managed to convert Kalaka by inviting the Buddha to Saketa and getting him to listen to the Dhamma. After his conversion, he built a monastery in his park and offered it to the Buddha. The commentary says that a group of 500 newly ordained monks of Saketa gathered in this Kalaka monastery and were speaking in praise of the Buddha, marveling at his extraordinary feat of converting the millionaire and the inhabitants of Sahagata. It was at this juncture that the Buddha came and addressed this deep discourse to those monks. According to the commentary, the discourse was so profound that at 5 points of the sermon, the earth shook miraculously, and at the end of the sermon, all the 500 monks who listened to it attained Arhatta. It is chronicled in the history of Buddhism that during the great missionary movement initiated by the Emperor Asoka, Venerable Maharakhita was sent to convert the country of the Yonakas. The very first sermon he preached there was based on this Kalakarama Sutta, on hearing which 37,000 attained 5 fruits of the Noble Path. If the identification of the Yonakas with the Greeks is correct, the choice of this deeply philosophical discourse is understandable. According to the chronicles and the commentaries, another significant occasion in which the Kalakarama Sutta served as a theme was when Kala Buddharakhita Theya gave an all-night sermon on the dark night of the new moon Poya day, seated under the black Thimbaru tree at Chetiyapabbata in Sri Lanka. King Saddhatissa was also present in the audience. The fact that this discourse was held in high esteem is evident from its historical background. As in the case of many other deep discourses, here too we are faced with the problem of variant readings. Even the commentator is at a loss to conclude, and editors go their own way. We have to wade through the variant readings to make some sense out of the discourse as it is handed out. Let us now take up the relevant portions of this abstruse discourse. Yam bhikkhave sadeva kassa lokassa samarkassa sabrahmakassa sassamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manussaya tithang sutang mutang minyatang pattang pariyehitang anuvicharitang manasa tamahang janane. Yam bhikkhave sadeva kassa lokassa samarkassa sabrahmakassa sassamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manussaya tithang sutang mutang minyatang pattang pariyehitang anuvicharitang manasa tamahang abhanyasa tam tathagatassa viditang tang tathagato na upatthaya. Yam bhikkhave sadeva kassa lokassa samarkassa sabrahmakassa sassamana brahmaniya pajaya sadeva manussaya ditthang sutang mutang minnyatam pattang pariyehitam anuvicharitam manasa tamahan na janami iti vadeyyam tam mama samusa tamahan janami cha na cha janami iti vadeyyam tam passa tadisameva tamahan neva janami na janami iti vadeyyam tam mama sakal. Iti ko bhikkhave tathagato dittadatthabbam dittham na manyati adittham na manyati dattabbam na manyati dattharam na manyati sutta sotabbam sutam na manyati asutam na manyati sotabbam na manyati sotaram na manyati muta motabbam mutam na manyati amutam na manyati motabbam na manyati motaram na manyati vinyata vinyatabbam vinyatam namanyati avinyatam namanyati vinyatabbam namanyati vinyataram namanyati iti ko bhikkhave tathagato ditta sutamuta vinyatabbesu dhammesu thadi eva thadi tamma cha panatadi ma anyo thadi uttari taro va panita taro va natthi iti vadami yam kinchi dittam vasutam mutam va jyotitam satyamutam paresam නතේසු තාදී සයසංගුතේසු සත්‍යං මුසාවා විපරං දහියං ඒතංච සල්ලං පටිගච්ච දිස්වා ජෝතිතායත් පජාරි සත්තා ඥානාමි පස්සාමි තතේව ඒතං අජෝතිතං නති තථාගතං monks whatsoever in the world with its gods maras and brahmanas among the prajani consisting of recluses and brahmins gods and men whatsoever is seen heard sensed cognized thought after and pondered over by the mind, all that do I know. Monks, whatsoever in the world with its gods, maras and brahmas, among the progeny consisting of recluses and brahmins, gods and men, whatsoever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, thought after and pondered over by the mind, that have I fully understood. All that is known to the Tathagata, but the Tathagata has not taken his stand upon it. If I were to say, monks, whatsoever in the world with its gods, maras and brahmas, among the progeny consisting of recluses and brahmins, gods and men, whatsoever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, thought after and pondered over by the mind, or that I do not know, it would be a falsehood in me. If I were to say I both know it and know it not, that too would be a falsehood in me. If I were to say I neither know it nor am ignorant of it, it would be a fault in me. Thus, marks, a Tathagata does not imagine a visible thing as apart from seeing. He does not imagine an unseen. He does not imagine a thing worth seeing. He does not imagine a sphere. He does not imagine an audible thing as apart from hearing. He does not imagine an unheard. He does not imagine a thing worth hearing. He does not imagine a hearer. He does not imagine a thing to be sensed as apart from sensation. He does not imagine an unsensed. He does not imagine a thing worth sensing. He does not imagine one who senses. He does not imagine a cognizable thing as apart from cognition. He does not imagine an uncognized. He does not imagine a thing worth cognizing. He does not imagine one who cognizes. Thus, mas, the Tathagata, being such in regard to all phenomena, seen, heard, sensed and cognized, is such. Moreover than he who is such, there is none other higher or more excellent, I declare. Whatever is seen, heard, sensed, or clung to and esteemed as stripped by other four, midst those who are entrenched in their own lives, being such, I hold none as true or false. This barb I build well in advance, whereon mankind is hooked, impaled, I know, I see it is verily so, no such thing for the Tathagata. In the first statement, the Buddha declares that he knows tamaham jñānāmi, whatever is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, thought after and pondered over by all beings in the world, and that is the sum total of the knowledge acquired through the six sense bases. In the second statement, he affirms that the knowledge he has is of a higher order, tamaham abhanyāsi, that amounts to an understanding, tam tathāgatasya viditā, by virtue of which he does not take his stand upon it. He has no stunts, tam tathāgato na upatthāsi. The third statement flows from this detached perspective. It is to the effect that the Tathagata cannot disclaim knowledge despite his detached attitude, as it would be tantamount to prevarication in the eyes of the world, tam mamasya musa. The fourth statement highlights the same incongruity, because the Tathagata placed in this awkward situation cannot compromise by both claiming and disclaiming knowledge at the same time. Tamaham jñānāmi ca na ca jñānāmi iti vadeyyam tam passatādisanamo. As the fifth statement makes it clear, the Tathagata does not deem it fit to wriggle out by neither claiming nor disclaiming knowledge of sense data. Then comes the declaration as to how the Tathagata treats this body of sensory knowledge of the world. Thus, monks, Tathagata does not imagine a visible thing as apart from the sea. Itiko bhikkave tathagato ditta dattabbam ditta samanya. We have come across the terms ditta, sutta, mutta, vinyata quite often. For instance, in our discussion of the Bhaja Sutta in the context, ditta ditta mattam bhavisati, sutta sutta mattam bhavisati, mutta mutta mattam bhavisati, vinyata vinyata mattam bhavisati. In the seen there will be just the seen, in the heard there will be just the heard, in the sense there will be just the sense, in the cognized there will be just the cognized. In common parlance, the word seen connotes something seen. But here we have something more radical, avoiding substantialist insinuations. It is just the seen in the seen, implied by ditta, in this context too. The Tathagata takes it just as a seen, without imagining that there is something substantial, worthwhile seen, as apart from it. Ditta dattabbam dittam na manyati. We are already familiar with the term manjana, having discussed it in such discourses as the Mula Pariyaya Sutta and the Bhaja Sutta. It stands for imaginings prompted by cravings, conceits and views. Tathagata is free from such imagining. He does not imagine a thing worthwhile seeing apart from the seen, nor does he imagine an unseen, adittam na manyati. The phenomenon of seeing is not denied, The phrase dattabbanna manyati conveys the idea that the Tathagata does not imagine that there is something worth seeing, that there is something essential in it. Dattaranna manyati, he does not imagine a seer or one who sees. He does not project an agent into the phenomenon by taking seriously the subject-object relationship. With regard to the heard, sutta, the sensed, mutta, and the cognized, vinyata, too, the Tathagata has no such imaginings. Then in summing up, it is said, Ittiko bhikkave tathagato ditta sutta mutta vinyata abhyesu dhammesu tadi eva tadi. Thus monks, the Tathagata, being such in regard to all phenomena, seen, heard, sensed and cognized, is such. The term tadi too came up in a number of our earlier sermons. We rendered it by such. It stands for the quality of steadfastness of the Arahant in remaining unshaken by the eight worldly vicissitudes. His mainstay in this respect is atammayata or non-identification. He is such because he does not grasp any of those things as mine. So he is such in regard to whatever is seen, heard, sensed and cognized. There is no one who is higher or more excellent than this such-like one in point of suchness. Then comes a couplet of verses presenting the gist of the sermon. Our rendering of the sermon is in need of further explication. Though it gives a general idea, some words and phrases in the original have far-reaching implications. The basic idea behind the series of declarations made is the extraordinary change of attitude towards the question of speculative views which marks off the Tathagata from all his contemporaries. He took a completely different turn, transcending the extremes of eternalism and annihilationism. This difference of attitude is revealed by the riddle-like statements in the first part of the discourse. One gets the impression that the Tathagata was confronted with the problematic situation of the highest order. The first statement is to the effect that the Tathagata knows whatever in the world with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, among the progeny consisting of recluses and Brahmins, gods and men, is seen, heard, sensed, cognized, thought after and pondered over by the mind. The second statement asserts that the Tathagata has a high understanding of all that. All the same, he takes no stance in regard to whatever is seen, heard, sensed and cognized. This might appear as a riddle. Usually, when one has a higher understanding of something, one is inclined to take one's stand upon it. But here we have a denial. The discourse bears some resemblance to the tetralemma we had discussed earlier. But there seems to be a difference here in the formulation of the first proposition of the tetralemma. Normally, the first proposition amounts to an unqualified assertion of the affirmative standpoint. In this case, however, we find the statement that the Tathagata not only knows all what the world knows, but that he has a high understanding of it, abhanyasi. It is precisely because he has a higher understanding that he takes no stance in regard to it. This might appear problematic, but let us remind ourselves of the two levels of understanding mentioned in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta discussed earlier, namely Sanjanati and Abhijanati. As an instance of the first level of understanding, we get the following passage in the discourse in regard to the untaught ordinary person, Sutva Putujjana. Patavin patavito sanjana, patavin patavito sanyatva, patavin manyati, patavya manyati, patavito manyati, patavin meti manyati, patavin abhinandati. He perceives earth as earth. Having perceived earth as earth, he imagines earth as such. He imagines on the earth. He imagines from the earth. He imagines earth is mine. He delights in earth. The untaught ordinary person has a perceptual knowledge of earth, sanjana. That too is a level of knowledge. It is in fact the lowest grade of knowing. The untaught ordinary person can do no better than perceive earth as earth. Having perceived earth as earth, he takes it seriously by its face value and goes on imagining by way of craving, conceit and views, granting it object status. He imposes the grammatical superstructure on it. He imagines on the earth, he imagines from the earth, he imagines earth is mine, he delights in earth. This then is the lowest grade of knowledge. On the other hand, about the Tathagata's level of understanding, the Moolapariyaya Sutta has the following description. Patavim patavito abhijanati. Patavim patavito abhinyaye patavim namanyati. Pataviya namanyati. Patavito namanyati. Patavim meti namanyati. Patavim nabhinandati. He understands through higher knowledge earth as earth. Having understood through higher knowledge earth as earth, he does not imagine earth to be earth. He does not imagine on the earth. He does not imagine from the earth. He does not imagine earth is mine. He does not delight in earth. The Tathagata, who has a higher knowledge of earth, as suggested by the word abhijanati, does not entertain imaginings by taking earth at its face value. He is not carried away by the grammatical structure to imagine in such terms as on the earth and from the earth. In the present context too, the same distinction in grades of knowledge is evident. Firstly, the Tathagata says, all that do I know, that have I fully understood, all that is known to the Tathagata. It is precisely because of this full understanding that he has not taken his stand upon it. He has no stunts in regard to all that. This is the gist of the first paragraph of the discourse, which sounds more or less a paradox. It is because of this apparently clear state of affairs that the Tathagata had to confess that it would be a falsehood on his part to say all that I do not know. If someone asks whether it is because he does not know that he takes no stance, he cannot say yes. As a matter of fact, it is precisely because he has understood that he takes no stance. But the wordings are of the opinion that knowledge of a thing entitles one to assert it dogmatically. To say, I both know it and know it not, I neither know it nor am ignorant of it, would also be mistaken by the world as a prevarication or equivocation. The first paragraph of the discourse has to be understood in this light. The commentary has it that the earth shook at 5 points in the discourse. According to it, the 3 significant terms Janami, Abhanyasim and Viditam, I know, I have fully understood, all that is known to the Tathagata, represent a plane of omniscience, Sabbanyuta Bhumi, peculiar to Buddha. Even at the end of this proclamation of omniscience, it is said the earth shook as a mark of approbation. Then the phrase na upatthasi does not take its stand upon it, is interpreted by the commentary as indicating the plane of the influx-free one, kinasa bhumi. Why the Tathagata has no stance in regard to sensory data is said to be due to his freedom from influxes. He does not grasp them by way of craving, conceit and views. He does not take his stand upon things seen, heard, sensed and cognized. He has no inclination or clinging towards them.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible, free of charge, to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.